Merry Christmas. Mrs. Merry Christmas.
Kind of catchy out here.
Yeah, that sounds nice, Lloyd. But, you know, don't you think you might be jumping the gun a little bit? I mean, you know, who knows? You know, maybe once you get to know her, you'll find out that she's not your type.
Hey! Don't you ever say that again. She is the love of my life! The blood in my veins! We belong together! Till the mountains fall into the sea, till the heavens collide, or until I get sick of her and need to move on. You hear me?
Okay. Lloyd, just calm down. Just calm down.
Welcome to the Unnamed Movie Podcast. This is Angelo.
And this is Douglas. Without Damien. Wait. No, he's not here. Anyway. It is Tom. And we are talking. What are we talking about, fearlessly, Doug?
Without Damien, I guess we'll do that normal and go with what we watch this week. Douglas, what have you been watching this week?
Holy shit. This week, I haven't watched much, but that's nothing different from the last few weeks.
Or the week before that.
The week before the last few weeks?
Yes, there is a week before the last few weeks.
Just making sure.
I did know what I said.
Okay. Well, let us see. What did I watch? I actually rewatched a really, really good movie. A movie so good that I'm ashamed to say I don't own it yet. I rewatched The Fall. That movie
is... I still haven't watched it.
What? You are crazy. That's where Yo-Ho-Ho came from, by the way. I found out that The Fall was really just a remake of Yo-Ho-Ho. So I wanted to see how the two... What?
I'm afraid, no.
No. When you watch The Fall, you'll not be afraid anymore. Andrew, trust me. That movie, it's beautiful. It's visually breathtaking, and it has a story that is so sad and so sweet that if you're not crying at the end, something wrong with you. Right? It's I would say it's very much on the same level as something like Cinema Paradiso. Like that type of feeling that you get when you're watching a movie. And it's got the cutest little girl. You just want to pinch her cheeks. Anyway, I did watch one other movie, and that movie was a new-ish movie. I think it just came out on DVD, Wild Target, with Sir Ronald Weasley. along with Bill Nye and Emily Blunt. You know me, Andrew, I really don't like Emily Blunt in pretty much anything she's been in, but I really did enjoy this movie. I was thinking about it today. That would mean that up to now, there are still no movies that I have seen with Ronald Weasley in it that I don't like. All the Harry Potter movies are awesome. I mean, yeah, whatever, the first two are kind of crappy, but listen, I liked the time, we've got nostalgia going for it. I love the books. Just leave me and my Harry Potter love alone, okay? Then there was Driving Lessons, which I thought was a really, like, awesome movie.
I like that movie.
Yeah, exactly. And now there's Wild Target. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, the only other one that he's in that I haven't seen yet is Cherry Bomb.
That's
or something like that.
Something to do with Cherry. I'm not sure what the title is right now.
Where he's like a gangster. But anyway, back to this movie. This movie is it's a comedy. It's with, I think I said already, Bill Nye, Emily Blunt, and I don't know his real name, so he's Ron to me. It's about...
His name is Rupert Grint.
Right, I do know his real name. What the hell's wrong with me? Rupert. So it's about an assassin played by Bill Nye, who you kind of find out early on in the movie is not just trained as an assassin, he's almost like, not just groomed, but but grown and birthed and genetically selected to be an assassin. His dad is an assassin, and from the way people talk, it sounds like his granddad is an assassin and his great granddad, and so it's, you know, something, it's in the blood. And his mom, who is a part of the business. Yes, the business is on him because he's like, you know, you're almost 50 now. That was the, you know, about the age that your dad was when he had you and started training you. And so that's where I guess Rupert comes in, which is that he becomes now the surrogate son, because of course Bill Nye doesn't really want to have a child or something, I don't know, whatever. But
I never see Bill Nye as a father ever.
I know, but no, the movie is actually not, it doesn't play
it
that.
It has to be the creepy uncle.
And trust me, he plays that part to the T in this movie.
It's not just age.
They don't play up the whole father figure type of thing. From his end. From Rupert's end, they do, because you see him kind of like, oh, this guy is awesome. A lot. But it's so funny because, okay, so how this movie is set up is that Bill Nye is hired to kill Emily Blunt. And because Emily Blunt has, you know, done some shady dealings. Exactly. And Rupert Grint, for some reason, he looks like he's just a homeless hobo without a shotgun, but with a J, smoking some weed on the side of the road when, you know, shit goes down. And funny little fact, do you remember the manager from Love Actually?
The manager?
Like Bill Nye's manager.
Yeah.
He's in this movie. And he's like just a bad guy, and he gets into this, but whatever. So yeah, I'm going around and around.
He's not Captain Industry.
He's not. But anyway, to get from under my circles that I'm running around in, essentially this is a comedy about an assassin that doesn't do his job right and builds a new life because of it. So kind of along the lines of Gross Point Blank or, you know, something like that. Yeah. And I wouldn't say it's as good as Gross Point Blank, because I'm sorry, Andrew, Gross Point Blank is one of my favorite movies of all time. But
I didn't say it wasn't a good movie.
No, I'm not even saying that. I didn't even think of you not liking it. I'm just, you know, trying to give it some sort of perspective.
I said High Fidelity is better.
Maybe. But anyway, what am I saying? So yeah, it's not as good as Gross Point Blank, but still pretty decent. It's you know what it is? It's a fun time.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really good watch. It may not be, you know, the deepest of movies, but I laughed. Let's say I didn't cry, and I had fun.
That's nice. Anything else you saw this week?
Does Burn Notice count? I saw that episode with the full-on Irish, by the way.
Full-on Irish. Oh, what did you think of the full-on Irish?
I thought that was hilarious, but it was not as good as the next episode. What happened in the next episode again?
I don't remember. That's so bad for me.
Oh, fuck. I can't remember, but I remember it was something good.
I'm sorry. That full-on Irish just always caught me. Anyways, this week I saw a ton of films. Last week, when we had recorded the podcast, the latest film I had seen was John Woo's Hard Boiled.
Wow.
Which I thought was a perfect precursor to the next film I watched,
mm-hmm.
which was Sylvester Stallone's Expendables.
Well done.
And I was worried that this movie was going to be utterly horrible, and I think, like, 80s nostalgia, all of those action people coming together, like, I found myself sitting there and trying to connect the dots in careers watching this movie. But I actually kind of enjoyed myself. Like, there were moments where these guys were just joking around. Like, there's this one scene where Jet Li comes to Stallone, because how it works is that there are these group of mercenaries, and Stallone is like the leader, who decides on what jobs they do and
how people get paid.
Wait, stop. Have you finished One Bear already?
I have finished One Bear already.
Andrew, I haven't even finished half of One Bear already. What the hell? I've got to catch up here.
No, no, no worry. I'll drink that other one before you go. Jet Li comes to Stallone as the leader of the group and goes, "Buddy Stallone, I need more money."
For the kids!
That's what he says.
I know, I've seen that piece. I started watching it and I fell asleep.
And he's like, and he's trying to explain why he deserves more money than the rest of the team. And he's like, "Dude, I'm small. I have to put in more work," and I couldn't stop laughing through all these things. Dolph Lundgren, I just love him. Like, I just sat there laughing at Dolph Lundgren.
Every time I saw him, I was like, "Not He-Man? Are you sure? Where's your cape? Where's the sword? By the power of Grayskull!"
There's a fight between Dolph Lundgren and Jet Li. And at one point, Dolph Lundgren lifts up Jet Li in the air. And I couldn't stop thinking of that line from Rocky IV, where he just goes, "I will break you." It's a fun bad movie is what it is.
Awesome.
Also, I watched the first movie by these guys and the first movie I'm seeing, the Duplass Brothers. I watched The Puffy Chair.
Oh, I didn't see that one. Okay. What did you think?
I wasn't a huge fan.
Okay, fair enough.
I get it. It's the indie dramedy, you know. They're driving across the country with this chair for the guy's father, and the relationship thing is going on, and the brother is there, and the girlfriend is trying to figure out the brother because he's kind of odd, and there's the tension in this what I would assume is a long relationship at this point. I get it. I've seen numerous movies like this, but I just didn't like it that much.
Watch Baghead. Way really, really good. I like that one.
I watched also The Secret of Kells, which is what everyone would know as that other animated film at the Oscars last year. When you look at the nominees for the best animated feature at the Oscars last year, it was like, "Oh, we all saw those," and then that one film that no one ever heard of, this Irish animated film, and I really enjoyed it. It was quite an interesting film. It has a lot of religious undertones, which I guess kind of bothered me, because I'm like, I don't want to talk about that stuff, but you know, it was there and I enjoyed it.
A lot of movies do that though, especially like kiddies. Like, Narnia is one huge offender right there.
Well, I actually prefer it when it's Narnia-esque, where you really have to look for it, kind of. At least I feel like that when I'm watching Narnia. Because, I mean, I get what you're saying when Narnia, you can relate Narnia to religion and stuff. And also, what was that other one which people always talk about, the one that flopped and...
The compass, the golden compass. Apparently that one, everybody was up in arms. I don't know how true this is because I've never read the books and I tend not to believe all of these internet scares, but they were all like, "Oh, in the third book they kill God," like some foolish said that, or they worship devils, or I remember
hearing all of that madness. Like, you see with those movies, like, you really have to know it. You really have to be old enough to know what you're looking for.
And if
you ignore it, you can just enjoy the story on its own. While with this movie, it doesn't bat you over the head, but it's back in history in Ireland when they were dealing with being invaded by the Vikings, and there were these small communities. And there's a huge religious background in the communities, and they're even talking about the book. Yeah, it's a really enjoyable film, and once you get past the first like 10 minutes, which is him chasing a goose around the town kind of stuff, it becomes really, especially when you see him going to the forest.
Did Mr. Pistaker ask him to find it?
Pistaker?
P-S-taker?
Oh. That's a nice one. The last movie I'll talk about this week was Grown Ups, the film starring Adam Sandler, Rob Schneider. It's Rob Schneider.
Yeah, it's Rob. I always mix up Rob and Roy, but Roy died and Rob's still alive.
Roy is Jaws.
Yeah.
Chris Rock, Kevin James, and David Spade. And first note that I'd like to say, noticing this film, I think that if Chris Farley didn't exist, it would have been David Spade and Kevin James as the fat guy and the skinny dude.
You think so? Oh my goodness.
They work well together, I'd like to see.
So what you're saying is, all this time, the reason that... What did you say his name was? David Spade?
David Spade and Chris.
Is that his name?
That's his name.
Is he that close to David Spader?
Yes, he is. No,
it's not David Spade. I don't know. Maybe I'm...
All right, let me double check this.
Well, that's how horrible it is. That's how long he's not been on my radar that I can't remember his name, because I used to love him.
David Spade.
There you go.
Because you started to make me doubt myself.
Yeah, I know the feeling. But yeah, so what you're saying is that David Spade, the reason he hasn't been on my radar and the reason that he's only had, like, you know, two big shows and big jobs since then, is because he needed another fat guy?
Yes, stop before you say it. David Spade, name me stuff he's been in that you. Name me his stuff. Name me his stuff.
His stuff that without Chris Farley or.
No,
or
just name me his stuff.
Well, he was in Tommy Boy. He was in Black Sheep. He is in Rules of Engagement. He was in the show about the magazine.
I'd like to take note as to what you've named first.
the show about the magazine. Just Shoot Me. Is it Just Shoot Me?
Just Shoot Me.
Okay. Now, other than that, he was in this crap with Christina Applegate. The child star thing. He was also in Dirt. Which, actually, a lot of people love. And... I remember that movie. Yeah, Joe Dirt. Okay, I remember thinking it wasn't that great, but I'll rewatch it. Shit, why not? Other than that, I think he's just small roles in big movies. And probably TV shows.
Yeah, pretty much. I was worried about this movie walking in, thinking it would be horrendous. Because... it looks like one of those movies where Adam Sandler, who's become this huge star over the years, is using his celebrity and his status with studios or whatever to be able to make a movie where he basically, instead of doing a good movie, just says, you know what, we don't care what kind of movie we make, I'm hanging out with my friends for 3 months.
But you see, Andrew, I'm going to say it to you now, exactly what I said to you, when you told me this off-air as well. Isn't that the same thing as every other one of his movies? If you look closely, all his movies have certain aspects, certain things in common. One of those being Rob Schneider. Another one of those being... I don't know. All of these guys that are in his films generally stick around. Even the new ones, which is what I think is really funny and really cool and really, like, sells him as being actually a nice guy. That once he books a new star, he keeps them. Chris Rock keeps coming back. Kevin James since Chuck? No, not Chuck.
Chuck and Larry.
Yeah, that was the first one. Mm-hmm. Since that, he's been coming back. Dave Matthews did two of his movies. I don't know if he's in this one. This would make the third. But you can tell me because you saw it. I haven't seen it yet.
No, I don't think I caught Dave Matthews in this one.
Okay, but he gets people to come and he gets them to stay. So that just shows he's a funny guy, because I think he's actually funny. I know a lot of people don't like him, but... she's fun to watch, and clearly he's a fun guy to be around, otherwise people wouldn't work with him as much as they do.
And yeah, I get you, and for what I said, it totally was. It was an excuse for him to hang out with his friends, but the reason why this movie is better than expected, I'm not going to tell you that this movie is good, because it isn't.
Okay, stop before I say that. Would you say that Zohan was good?
I love Zohan.
I know, but would you say that it was good?
It's a good bad movie. you know what I mean.
I know exactly what you mean, because I think the same exact thing. I'm just trying to figure out, from your description, would I like this film? Because I don't have very high hopes for it.
No, I'm going to say no, you would not like this film. However, what I liked about this film were the points where we didn't care about the plot. There were plot points in this movie where when you hit those, you were like, ugh, that's the movie I was expecting. But all those moments in between those plot points where basically all of these friends are just hanging out and complaining and joking around, I loved it.
So you're telling me this is a generic movie? Are you telling me that this is actually going to be a movie where old friends meet, realize they've grown old and different, and get into fights, and then realize that they're actually, going to bond and become closer friends at the end?
No, but that's the funny bit. It's not about old friends who's changed. It's old friends who've stayed the same. The thing that they're always complaining about is their children. Which I can actually get behind. I actually thought it was a really cool thing for them to do, because the big thing is Adam Sandler. He's the star of the show.
Of course. That's the one thing. Adam Sandler's like, I love you guys, you be in my movie, but no, it's my movie. I am the star.
The thing about it is that they want to go back to this summer resort. It's like the lake. I can't describe it because it feels odd.
Is it like one of those camp thingies? Like, so they went there for camp like when they were 12 and now they want to come back? Is that it?
They all want to come back and they're bringing their entire families. And the thing is that Adam Sandler, as the big Hollywood agent, is...
Oh, is that what he is?
He is. He's the big Hollywood agent. He is the rich one of the group. And he pays.
That makes sense, because I don't see him getting with Salma Hayek any other way. I'm sorry.
He pays for the resort for like the weekend, and they all come and they all enjoy. And the motivation for Sandler is not only the fact that he gets to hang out with his friends and spend a weekend where he had his childhood, is that he wants to try and get his children into something other than the faces of video games or $10,000 an hour nannies or all sorts of things. He feels like his children have lost touch with the world and are just snobby brats. And he wants this weekend to be an opportunity for them to experience normal life and to try and ground them somewhat by speaking with real people and trying to... And that's something I can get behind. That's something that I watch at and I was like, that totally seems real to me. That's actually a really good idea for the basis of what this film is. But towards the second half of the film, it starts to become really stupid. Like, even towards the end, the whole idea of what they were doing when they were 12 was that they won this basketball tournament thing at the same camp, and the people who are still there when they're 40 and families are the same team that they beat when they were 12, and now that they're back, they're like, we want a rematch. And holy shit, the end of the film is the rematch. And
I'm sure what happens is one of two things: they either barely win based off of some like ridiculous play, or they lose but love it.
I'm not going to tell you what happened, but I'm going to tell you, you might be right with one of those. certain things, like films like this will do, is that you notice and you hate about movies like this, is that when the rematch happens, magically, all the wives put on cheerleader outfits and start coming out and cheering.
Goodness,
who the hell would do that? I'm talking about it like this movie's good, but
wouldn't Anne Heche should probably do that.
What?
Anne Heche should probably
do that. Anne Heche? Heche, who's Anne
Heche? You don't know who Anne Heche is? Really?
I'm lost. Who's Anne Heche? What?
Oops, she's in one of your favorite movies. I think it's called 7 Days and 7 Nights with Harrison Ford. But she is...
I don't remember ever calling that one of my favorite.
Anyway, she's in all sorts of things. She's in Psycho. She's in...
The new Psycho.
Wait, is she in Psycho? No. You know what I think? She's in something
Psycho,
else. No. But what she is in... Anyway, yeah. What she is in that you kind of like now is this TV show called Hung.
Oh, you're talking about the...
She's an ex-wife.
Oh, okay. I thought it was a pimp.
No. But how do you not know who Anne Heche is? It's not like... She was fairly famous
in
her time.
I've never heard that name before.
Wow. Okay, I'm sorry, Andrew. You can cut all of that out so you know you don't seem that out of it.
Anyways, that's what I watched this week, and the rest of the stuff I'm gonna leave alone.
Whoa, you're not gonna talk about something very marathony, no?
I'm gonna leave that for what I write.
No, quickly though, did you like it?
No, I did not.
Okay, fair enough. I figured I wouldn't either, but I really want to see it anyway.
Like, you remember last week when Damon was here and he was asking me about Dune? And you remember what he said I should have written? That's what I'm feeling right now about that movie. And
wow.
If any of you lost, just go to last week's podcast and just skip through to when we talk about Dune. It was, yeah. Anyways. Trailers.
What trailers did we watch today?
We saw a trailer for Hobo with a Shotgun.
People look at you and think of how wonderful your future will be. They want you to be something special, like a doctor or a lawyer. I hate to tell you this, but if you grow up here, you're more likely to wind up selling your bodies on the streets. Or shooting dope from dirty needles in a bus stop. And if you're successful, you'll make money selling junk to crackheads. And you won't think twice about killing someone's wife. Because you won't even know wrong in the first place. Maybe you end up like me. The Hobo with a Shotgun.
Which is inspired by a fake trailer like Machete.
Yes.
We haven't seen Machete just yet.
Not quite. I don't think it's going to come out here. So, again,
it has everything that it needs to come out here.
It does, but you know what it doesn't have, or what it has that means that it's not going to come out here?
Well,
it's ridiculous. It's not based in any kind of reality. And it's not... I haven't been following it, but I don't believe that this would be a huge blockbuster.
Anyways.
But, yeah. Anyway, what were
you... Hobo with a Shotgun.
Hobo
Douglas,
with a Shotgun.
You saw this trailer. What did
I did see this trailer. On the trailer alone, assuming I knew nothing about this movie, I would probably not like this at all. The trailer is fairly bad. The first three quarters of it is really a bunch of scenes cut up in between you hearing Kris Kristofferson.
Oh shit, you know his name.
Yes, I do. He's Kris Kristofferson. He actually is also a musician. I think he's like a bit of a country musician too. But anyway, this movie, he is narrating and he's talking to what I can only assume is his grandchild,
a child.
It's a child, but I think it's his grandniece. not grandniece, sorry, granddaughter.
Specific,
yeah, right? I think it's his granddaughter, and that he's telling her, you know, how, oh, yes, whenever people look at you, they will say that, you know, you've got the best days ahead of you, but really what's going to happen is this and that and the other. And he's clearly a bitter old man, and something has happened, very Mad Max-esque, and the rest of the trailer shows you that, yes, this movie is going to be Mad Max-esque. And in a sense, that's good, because even though I don't like the trailer, exactly the things that I just described are why I want to like this movie. Because I enjoyed Mad Max, and I love a lot of movies of that ilk. You know, the revenge film, the B-grade film, the I will throw gore and blood and guts at you all the time just for kicks, but, you know, make it ridiculous enough for you to laugh at kind of film. And that's what I think this movie is going to be. And even though the trailer does portray that, there's something about it that it just doesn't rub me the right way. It's almost as if maybe they're trying a bit too hard. They're taking themselves a bit too seriously in the trailer. And I hope that doesn't translate into the movie. But I guess time will tell and we'll see. But yes, I want to watch this movie. No, I wouldn't if all I knew about it was the trailer.
So, let me just get this straight. What did you think of the Machete trailer when you first saw it?
Oh, fuck yeah, man. I love that trailer. Wait, it depends on which one, though. There are like 20 of them. Which one are you talking about?
The first one you saw.
Oh, you mean the one on Grindhouse?
But the first one you saw that was for the film.
Actually, I've pretty much enjoyed most of the Machete trailers. Because, like I said, there's something about it, and I can't really describe it, and I can't, like, explain the difference between, say, the Hobo trailer and the Machete trailers that I've seen, but there's a sense that it's not taking itself 100% seriously, and it knows that with all of this ridiculous nudity and violence and blood and whatnot, that's what it is. It's ridiculous. It's not real, and we are not going to treat this as if this is Bourne Identity, or this is James... Well, I shouldn't use James Bond, because that goes ridiculous sometimes. But this is not something that they're treating as if it's supposed to be fairly real life and a part of some sort of reality. It is like, we're going to do all of this and just have fun and make it, you know, we're not going to take ourselves seriously. And that is, I guess, the factor that's the tipping point.
Well, I think the difference is that I got that vibe from this trailer.
Oh, you did?
It wasn't taking it so seriously. I mean, it knows what R-rated action horror films are. It knows what these films are, and it knows what kind of things it does. And I felt that it used this narration so wonderfully in that it was describing the world that we're going to be in, and then eventually it hits us with like 30 seconds of ridiculous, gory action. And that 30 seconds is what really represents this film. The rest of it was just a mural on the wall of what this world would be like if we lived there. And it's that 30 seconds is what's going to be spread out through the whole, I don't know, 92 hours.
92 hours, yes. I want to watch that movie. Please.
I meant 90 minutes to 2 hours. I'm stupid, sorry. And that is what makes me want to watch this movie. It might not turn out to be the greatest fun movie I've ever seen, but it looks like one of those movies I want to watch. Even though right now, after finding out about Machete and all this, I hope that this doesn't become like a constant trend of doing the grindhouse cinema. Because, like, I've seen B horror movies, and those movies are really bad at times. And I don't need more of those.
Well, you know, we'll see what happens. Maybe it'll fizzle. Maybe nobody will like it.
Maybe like Mark Vaughn says about whatchamacallit, comic book movies dying out. Anyways, also this week came out was the full theatrical trailer for Priest, the new Paul Bettany film.
The citizens have complete faith in the church's ability to keep them safe. You will not shake that faith.
What good is that faith when it's a lie?
If you take any action to leave the cities, you will be stripped from the order and excommunicated immediately.
The war is long over.
It's not over. Not for me.
And I watched this trailer, and it confirmed what I already knew about this movie. It looks hard.
Yes. And what's funny is that I know that when you're promoting a film, you don't want to give too much away. And so scenes will pop up, or common scenes will pop up from one trailer to the next. But so much of this trailer was in the teaser. And not only that, even the bits in this trailer that weren't in the teaser that we'd seen before looked exactly like the scenes that were in the teaser before. So
just added Christopher Plummer.
Exactly, that's all it was. And when I saw Christopher Plummer in that first scene when he had the cup, or it's really a grail, or a chalice, and he looked like he was doing a chant.
They thank Indiana Jones every time.
When he was doing that chant, I thought to myself, I was like, is he telling the story that needs to be told for the world to move on, or singing that song, you know? But no, I agree with you wholeheartedly. This movie looks so bad. It looks really awful.
It looks like a
awful,
movie that deserves
and, you know,
a February release.
Exactly. And another thing about this film is that
I think it's February.
I remember Paul Bettany's last film, the one where he was the angel. What was it called?
The one that we went and we watched?
Yeah, we actually watched it. I don't know why. I can't remember what it was called. Anyway, he was saving some sort of pregnant woman.
It
was a mixture of the Bible and Terminator. Legion, right. So it was Bible Terminator.
This is a May release. Holy shit, it's a summer movie.
Summer movie, of course. Because who does summer movies like Paul Bettany? He's, you know, the best. Ah, fuck that. No, I think that it's really weird that...
And it's the same director as Legion.
Okay, well, I was about to say that it's really weird that...
Scott Charles
both
Stewart.
Movies look very similar. They have the same sort of vibe to it, you know?
Monsters in the Night.
Exactly. Like, one in the first one in Legion, you've got an angel saving some people, and now you've got a priest saving some people. So essentially, it's just men of
you
God.
Cut off the wings.
Exactly,
and
you know? That's about it. And I don't know. I really shouldn't say bad things about Paul Bettany, because to tell you the truth, he is a good actor. There's nothing, there's nothing wrong with him. There, he's just trying to, I guess, go into the mainstream with these really trying too hard to be blockbuster hits, and that's, I think, a little bit sad, because I love him in roles like, for example, and I know this one was huge Oscar bait, but geez, it caught me, was Beautiful Mind.
Or how about his role in awesome summer blockbusters like Iron Man?
Yeah, I know. He was a computer. He was Jasper.
Jarvis.
Oh, Jarvis. I apologize. Another ridiculous sounding J name. But yeah, no. He's a good character actor, I think. And I think it's sad that he's doing this work instead of... I mean, I don't want to, you know, bring him down and say, oh, don't try for the leading role. Leading roles are great for everybody. Everybody wants one.
Hey, Ken Jeong knows he can't lead.
Right. No, but I'm not even saying that. I'm not even saying he can't lead. What I'm saying is he shouldn't try and lead in a horrible movie. Try and lead in a good movie. Exactly. Exactly. I haven't watched Darwin or whatever the crap. Creation. That's the name of it. But that looked like a horrible movie. But guess what? I'd be more inclined to see that than any of your crappy action films, sir. Because at least that one looks like you probably tried hard.
I think I said that this movie looks bad already. I'm moving on. I've seen, like, I don't want to say that I'm vampired out because I'm still in love with True Blood and stuff like that. But
okay.
But, like, seriously, dudes. Like, if I want to see this kind of movie, I'll go back and I'll watch Constantine again, which I actually liked.
I actually did enjoy Constantine, even though they're, like, that's another film, right? Another film that was horrible, but because it didn't take itself too seriously, I love it.
I remember going to the theater with my friends to watch that movie, and I feel bad about sharing this right now because, like, the guy I'm going to make a joke about, he actually died recently, like, he died, we went to see this movie with my friends, and there's this scene early in the film when you see them pick up, like, the dagger or whatever it is. You know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah.
And, like, the guy is walking out into the road, and you see all of these dead people, dead cows, dead everything all around.
Oh, right, yeah, okay. I remember
and then
that.
My friend leans over to me and says, "You know what? I think Kobe could do better." And not talking about Kobe Bryant, but a friend of mine. And it was this running joke on the fact that this guy, who we call Kobe, he did not shower that often. And I don't know why I'm telling you this, because the guy actually died. And I feel bad about saying this about it now. But you know, it happened, and it was a funny moment, and I remember it so in a loving tone. Anyways, I'm gonna move on.
When Dane... Okay.
Richard Dunn's got some growing up to do.
We both know that we're not equipped to deal with the current circumstances, and until you prove otherwise, I feel compelled to be on hand.
His only friend lives in his imagination.
You didn't bring him out here, did you?
Of course not. Why are you so incapable of believing I can do things perfectly fine on my own?
Because you never have.
You just don't like it because I'm on an upswing. Oh, my God.
Paper Man, okay.
Film starring Jeff Daniels.
Jeff Daniels, Emma Stone, and Kieran...
Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah, Ryan Reynolds. Wasn't Kieran Culkin in that too?
Kieran Culkin.
Yeah.
Otherwise, to my...
Oh, and Friends Lady.
Lisa Kudrow.
Yes.
So I guess the easiest way to start this off is to ask you, Douglas, if you had a choice, would you only watch the most awesomest movie in your mind once and never see anything again, or would you watch drab, stupid indie romantic comedies constantly?
But Andrew, couldn't I just watch the good stuff more than why don't I just watch the good stuff? Well, if I see
it's
something good,
Make a choice.
Okay, so both of us are making fun of this movie. There's a point in this film where, well, okay, so Jeff Daniels is like probably a 45, 50-year-old writer in this film.
He's not 23.
Not 23, no. But he has this relationship with this, like, 15, maybe 14-year-old girl, but played by...
15 or 14? Like, I'd buy her a 17.
I'd buy her a 17, too, but remember when you was talking to her friends? And they said they were 15.
I don't think
so.
That.
I don't know. Anyway.
I throw that out the window.
Anyway. So, he has this really, really young girlfriend... /daughter figure/babysitter played by Emma Stone, and she becomes something close to a muse but never quite, and they have a close relationship, and there's a point in the movie where they actually do that. They play the either or game, and Jeff Daniels just doesn't quite get it.
Just like how you just misrepresent yourself.
Exactly. But no, so this film, I actually really enjoyed this film. I did. It's essentially a film about a man who is far from and anything but grounded in reality. He has an imaginary friend who he's had since he was...
Second grade.
And so this is like a man who's 10 or 20 years away from dying. So like, wow, ridiculous. Come on. 70? 70, that's a good time to die, isn't it?
He's not 70.
10, add 20 years.
Yeah, but I give people till 80 at least.
Alright, fine. He's 30 years away from dying.
And that 30 years isn't something to scoff at.
Okay, it's not. Except the last 10 are probably gonna be in bed. So it's really 20 again.
Anyways, okay.
But anyway, he's really much too old for this kind of shit. He's very much like Murtaugh. Or is it Riggs?
Murtaugh.
Riggs is Mel Gibson. Okay.
Murtaugh is Danny. Let's get the movie reference clear.
Fine. Okay, so he has his own little imaginary friend who is played by Ryan Reynolds and is none other than a superhero. And his name is awesome.
Excellent.
Because I actually think it's really cool. It's very close to, it reminds me of Chuck, because in Chuck there's a Captain Awesome. But in this one it's not quite awesome, it's just excellent. Captain Excellent. And Captain Excellent has a wonderful voice. That Jeff Daniels needs to hear on more than one occasion, and that lights up my life whenever I hear it.
So why don't you just like skip through trailers constantly and listen to the trailer? Who says, "What in the world is engaging?" You know, it's the same damn thing.
It really is. But so there is a lot to laugh about in this movie, and I like that. But at its core, this film is a really serious film. It's about Jeff Daniels, who is very much grounded in his imaginary world, trying to move from that imaginary into the real world. Or maybe not trying, but being forced there. And getting there eventually, or hopefully. And I really did. I really like this movie. The relationship between him and Emma Stone is played out very well. I think that even though a lot of this film and a lot of Jeff Daniels' character is comedy relief, especially with the quirks that he has, because he has so many. He doesn't like a chair because it has a certain type of upholstery. He tries on many occasions.
Like a chair.
Yeah, no, but you know, it's to the level where he needs to get rid of it, because not because he doesn't like it, but because his body says he needs to get rid of it. He has animalistic urges to get rid of this thing. That's a difference between, you know what I mean, saying, boy, that chair do look nice. And you know, he's got this OCD thing going where he's like, I must get the first line right of my book. By the way, did I tell you he's a writer? Yes, he is a writer who wrote one book
apparently flopped.
Well, you see, I'm not even sure if it flopped, because he's got lots of cash, but at the same time that could be attributed to his doctor wife. So I'm not 100% certain on that. But yeah, it probably flopped. But he's impressed his young lady friend with it. And so essentially that's what this movie is. This movie is about Jeff Daniels kind of, I like that picture, getting back into the real world, or I don't even know if I can say getting back, because it seems as if he's been in his own imaginary world forever. And even if you judge the grades before grade 2, that's a lot of grades after that. So most of his life he's been in his imaginary playpen, and this movie, which shows him actually forming a real relationship, or the closest that he can get to a real relationship with Emma Stone, and then moving on from there and trying to become like a person who can do that, can form relationships with other people, is, I don't know, there's something about that I like, and I enjoyed watching this film for both the serious and the very funny pieces of it.
You see, here lies my first question, right? Mm-hmm. You talk about how this film is about him basically growing up, being
yeah.
able to make real relationships and things. This man is married.
I don't understand that either, Andrew. Let's not talk about
this.
This
man is married, which means he already technically has one, at least
no,
one.
No. But he's very unhappily married. And it's clear to everybody except him. It's so hilarious. You know, it's like his wife in the first scene drops him off in a secluded old house.
First of all, I'd like to say, in the opening scene, I thought she was his sister.
That's how unhappy they are.
But you see, here lies the thing, right? Even when you think about that, you could say that right now the relationship is rocky.
Andrew. Mm-hmm. A 15-year-old had to tell him that he was on a separation.
Can you let me ask you something to say for you before you try to shoot me down? Towards the end of this film, there is a conflict. I won't give away what it is, but there ends up being this huge spiel by our wife, Lisa Kudrow, who goes on about how all of her friends said she was the lucky one because he made her laugh. So there definitely was a point in this real relationship where both of them were happy.
Yeah, but you know what? I know I'm cutting you, and I just want to say this one thing. I believe that him making her happy wasn't really him making her happy. It was him making her laugh, because he was doing nothing more than just being himself and being selfish and just doing whatever he wanted to do. And at the time, she found that funny, which is kind of like your favorite movie, High Fidelity. But then after a while, you know, he doesn't change, but she does. And that's what that really is.
That's true, but the point is that for a while, and by a while, I mean up until meeting to marriage, to the wedding date, which I assume was more than 2 days.
Be careful there, friend.
She was happy. They were happy. Maybe he didn't know that there was sad and everything was happy to him, but at least she knew she was happy. You know? So there was a real relationship. So to say that this was all about him being able to make real relationships, I don't know. I did like the Emma Stone character, and I think that was the one thing I latched onto into this film. Jeff Daniels, yes, his character is funny, and he's always been good in comedy. So his stuff are good, but I really love the Emma Stone character, and I don't want to give anything away, but there are some really good reveals when it comes to her character.
Oh yes. Did you,
anything.
By the way,
I didn't
without giving me either. Like, after a while, I was like, they're talking. What? Wait.
I don't want to give that away at all. I loved it. It was brilliant.
It made so much sense to us. Like, why did I not see that?
like the way they gave, the way they informed me of what was really happening with her was just brilliant, and that alone earns this movie a high rental. Ryan Reynolds, we all know I love him to death. He's
one
of these actors who can move from action superstar to ridiculous hilarious dude. He's one of those guys who when you see him on screen you think, I'd like to be his friend. He just seems like a fun dude to be around kind of guy, and that persona is totally here, and I love it when you see him and he does his voice. What you talk about? it's fun. It's fun. Like the more, like I thought when that movie was done, I was like, yeah, I kind of liked it. There were a couple things niggling, but I kind of liked it. But now as I talk about it more and more, I like it more.
The movie?
The movie.
Yeah. I love how when you started talking about this movie, I was 105% sure you were going to be like, this movie's bad. Why are you making me watch this movie?
But I mean, a part of me also looks at this movie and says, oh, it's a Juno level of indie comedy, romantic comedy, in which everyone has to be ridiculously quirky all the time. But I like it. It's one of those that you end up liking, and that's kind of nice. But back to the question, Douglas, would you prefer to see the most awesomest of awesome movies once and nothing ever again, or drab, okay, romantic indie comedies every day?
Well,
and no in-betweens. Don't even try to work it in right now. Which would you prefer? And you can't watch an awesome movie again. You're done after that.
I can't watch an awesome movie again.
Just like, one but in your entire life.
Well, then, you know, I probably guess I'd watch the one movie, because then if I couldn't watch it again, at least I'd remember it.
Okay.
What about you?
Me, I'd probably watch the indie come, like, continuously. Exactly. Like, at least I'm watching TV.
Rise, everybody! Lights! Are you ready, Norma?
What is the scene? Where am I?
This is the staircase of the palace.
Oh, yes, yes. Down below, they're waiting for the princess. I'm ready.
All right. Cameras.
Oh, what are we moving on to, sir?
David isn't here. I'm kind of frustrated, so I'm giving up on waiting on this. So what?
Awesome.
All right. Anomalous Material, one of my favorite movie blogs. They started this whole thing they're doing for the next month, the Hollywood Fantasy Draft, where in which people all came together and they drafted their cast, their director, and they pitched a movie that they thought would be a good movie. And the last question they ask is, would you want to watch this movie? I was planning for us all to do this fantasy draft. We've been holding out on this for like a month because Damien just ignores us. And I'm sure that's why he's not here right now. He's afraid. So because I think it's kind of lame for us two alone to do the draft.
Okay.
I'd just like to leave it as to the question as to what movie would you make? So you've had how long to think about your movie? You have your cast. You have your director. What is this movie you would make?
Like, do you want me to get into specifics, or more like, ooh, it's like a broad brush. What do you
want to
tell?
Well, if you want to go into specifics, go into specifics. But all I'm looking for is a broad brush with cast and director. And
oh, so just essentially everything without the competition.
Yeah.
Okay, I get you.
And if I feel like pestering you about it a little bit, I'm hoping you can take it.
Okay, alright,
like
fair enough.
Might just feel pissed on me.
Damn right.
When I name mine. So you want to go first or me?
I'll go first, I guess.
Alright, you go first.
Okay, so mine is... It's the same thing that I talked to you about. I've talked to you about this on many occasions. And I held... I guess we held a little... a little pre-screening session with Miles last week.
Yeah.
But... So the one that I make, which I'm gonna tell you from now, some people may not like this topic, may think it's a little bit offensive, and I can see their point, but I'm gonna put it out there and see whatever. So my movie, well, it would be about specifically one person, one young man, an entrepreneur of such, who one day blindly stumbles over, not blindly, but by accident, stumbles over something that could make him a lot of money, and could make him rich and famous and, you know, the talk of the town. And this boy, this man almost, would be, I believe, Jesse Eisenberg. He would... I would have him start out hanging out with his friend in like a dorm room or at home in his bedroom or something like that. Just kind of shooting the shit on the computer, talking with his friend. And his friend's like, listen... And I'm not quite sure who I'd cast as a friend. At first, I wanted the brother or the son from City Island, but I realized he's much too young for this role. I need like 18, 19, 20-year-old to play this. And I'm not sure who I'd put in there, but I'd find somebody. Anyway, so the friend says... this is really weird, you know. I've been just looking at crap on the internet, and I found on, say, Wikipedia that there's this odd definition of kosher meat. So Wikipedia says that kosher meat or mammals that chew their cud and have cloven hoofs are kosher, right? So if you think about if you think about the most wonderful meat in the world, whatever. If you think about bacon. Pork and bacon, those come from the pig, which which everybody knows is not kosher. But the pig has cloven hoofs. All the pig needs to do is, you know, chew their own cud. But of course, that's kind of ridiculous because cud... Or to chew your cud, you have to be like a cow. You have to throw up some of your meal and then eat it back down again.
Right? I thought it was to eat your shit.
No. Pigs do that already.
Rabbits do that.
Yeah, all sorts of animals do that. But
I thought that was what your cud was, your shit.
No, your cud is... It's because you have... Some people say it's because you have two stomachs.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, that's why cows and
the cow
do
throws it...
two stomachs.
Yeah, but no. Cod specifically is not the stuff that comes out of your tail end. It comes out of your front end. You throw up and then you eat it again.
Okay.
It's like you first half metabolized it or half got it down to what you needed. And then when you're, you know, a little bit more calm, you can fully deal with the process or whatever. I don't know.
So my question is, how does a cow or a rabbit, since you mentioned them, know the difference between... their cud and what they're eating for the first time, meaning that when they've eaten the thing for the first time, they've eaten it and then they throw it up.
Yeah.
And then they eat their vomit.
Uh-huh.
Why don't they think to themselves, I've just eaten something, it's in my belly, I need to throw it up to then eat it again.
I don't know, it's one of those biological processes. A biologist or a zoologist would tell you it's because there is something about the second feeding that fully like helps you fully digest the food or something. I remember actually learning about this in biology.
I remember exactly how it works in that the whole idea is that they have two stomachs, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the first stomach, the second stomach is what does most of the breaking down process of the food.
Yeah.
The first stomach is what absorbs most of the nutrition. So then when they eat the food for the first time, it goes inside the first stomach, and the first stomach says, psh, this shit's too complex for me. It sends it to the second stomach. But since the second stomach goes then to the shitter, as I like to call it, they throw up to then eat again so that the first stomach can absorb the nutrition. That's what I remember from my high school biology course, at least.
Yeah, sure. I don't remember anything at all. I just remember there are two stomachs and you throw up and it's disgusting. But yes, that's what these guys look at. They're like, but hold on. So if pigs have half of the, you know...
Equation.
Exactly. Half of the requirements. Why can't we just train them to do the rest? Because really, what... I can put, like, you know, a stick down there and have them throw up and then, you know, they eat back. Because pigs do eat their own shit and all sorts of other rubbish. Why can't they eat their own, like, a throw up? Right? And that's the, you know, big plan, the idea behind the whole thing. And so, I guess Jesse Eisenberg trains these pigs to do this because, of course, you have to kind of have them do it on their own. It can't be like some machine or some guy that comes and slaps them across the face a little bit too hard and then because of it they throw up. They can't work like that. But anyway, somehow this works, right? And don't ask me how it does, but it does. And don't ask me how this is not offensive, because it might be. But anyway.
For all of our Jewish listenership, please email it.
Sorry, guys. I have Jewish friends, I promise.
Anyways.
Well, not the business, but... Okay, so Jesse Eisenberg...
Along with his 18-year-old unnamed friend.
No. His friend is kind of just, like, on the sideline. His friend saw this thing on the web and told Jesse about it. And Jesse's like, okay, I'll do that. And the friend's like, yeah, whatever, you can't do that. And he goes about his business. But Jesse gets it done, all right? And he starts to shop around because he's like, I know I can make a whole heap of money off of this, because the truth is, bacon tastes fucking good.
No juice can eat bacon.
Right? By the way, did you know you can only eat, if you're eating kosher, you can only eat the front half of the animal and not the back half?
And he didn't know that.
Again, that's a weird thing to me. I don't understand all of these rules and stuff. But
it's
anyway,
religion.
Exactly, religion. I know, yeah. So he figures out, he's like, I can take the front half and I get them to do their thing and it's working. So he is not a rich guy, he's a middle class, whatever, and he's not old enough to even have a job where he can be like, I am taking all of my money and putting it into this venture. He's, you know, like probably a college student.
Mm-hmm.
So he needs money.
Does he drop out of Harvard?
he doesn't drop out of Harvard, he drops out of Yale.
Okay. And for those of you who know what I'm talking about, yep, that's what I'm thinking. Go ahead.
Okay, so he finds a money man, or more specifically, a money man finds him, and this money man is Adam the Hebrew Hammer Goldberg. Okay. And he is kind of a low-level money man. Like,
keeping it Jewish, aren't we?
Shut up. So, I just like him. I really do. I think he can play slick, as shown by his Entourage character. And I need him to be a little bit slick, but at the same time, you know that he's slick and he's desperate because he's low-level and he wants to make it up high. And I think he can do that.
Okay.
And so... Adam Goldberg is the money man, and for a while it looks good. He gets Jesse Eisenberg connected to a shady little rabbi who kind of, like, you know, approves what he's doing and says, this is kosher. And that rabbi is Alan Arkin. I don't know if Alan Arkin is I think Alan Arkin is the best person for this role. I love him in his comedic roles. I love him in a movie we talked about before, Gross Point Blank. He's great in Little Miss Sunshine. When he has to play comedy, he plays it perfectly, impeccably. And
I'm just
I think
about
the joke with whatchamacallit, Kevin Pollak. I told you about
yes, that joke is hilarious.
hilarious. And I will not explain it here on the podcast.
That's not Alan Arkin, though, isn't it? Alan Alda?
It's Alan Arkin.
On MASH? Is Alan Alda.
Yeah, but it's not MASH.
Oh, it's not MASH? I thought you were talking about Alan Alda. Okay, whatever. Okay, yes, sorry. I'm horrible. Anyway, I was going to say if I didn't get him, I might get Mel Brooks, but I don't know. I think that's going way too
Once
cheesy.
Once again, keeping it
way
Jewish.
Too cheap. It's a rabbi we're talking about, dude. Anyway, okay, so after a while, he's going to get fairly big, right? The product is moving. Little Jews and the Jew kiddies love the bacon. They love the pork. So, you know, of course, you're not only going to be dealing with the low-level money man anymore. You're going to be dealing with higher, like, up-top kind of guys. And for the up-top guy, I actually want a lady by the name of Beverly D'Angelo. And her... I don't know what her biggest role is. Her biggest role for me would be Mrs. Griswold from the Vacation films. But right now, what she is on TV for is Ari Gold's partner, Babs, in Entourage.
Mm-hmm.
And she will be the upper-level money person that will have to deal with whatever problems that will come. And of course, there have to be problems that will come, and they will. Actually, I've skipped out a whole little bit. There's, I forgot that the low-level Mr. Goldberg, Mr. Hammer himself, gets Jesse not only involved with Alan Arkin, the rabbi, but he gets him involved with a face. You need a face for a product. You always need somebody to sell it. And this person, I was thinking maybe a Justin Timberlake kind of guy, but no. You know who I want for this? I'm going out guns blazing, Andrew. I want Brad Pitt. I want Brad Pitt to play exactly the person that he played for the Coen brothers in Burn After Reading. That's who I want
him
to play.
Or you want future him who's become like a famous person.
No. He's not. Well, he will become a famous person, but I want him to be stupid. I want him to be ridiculously stupid. But to get famous as the product gets big. So that, you know, he might be somebody who... Maybe he's not disgruntled, but he could be persuaded to be disgruntled by some sort of, you know, foreign party, let's say. And that foreign party could be the same friend who decided that, you know what? I found this out and I gave him the idea. Why can't I cash in? So the friend comes back to play like a rival role in the end, or in the third act, I suppose, of the film.
So this is a comedy?
Yeah, this is a comedy.
Okay. Clincher, who's the director?
No, that's a good question. Who is the director? The director... I'm not 100% sure who I want to direct. I don't want somebody like the Farrelly brothers. I don't want a heavy-handed comedy. The Coen brothers would be good. I love what they did with things like Intolerable Cruelty. That's the type of feel that I want for this movie. But where I had a list of directors here, and I haven't looked at it much because we've been like waiting and waiting, but I can't find it. But there was the Coen brothers who I was thinking of. There was also another director who I thought, but I can't remember. Anyway, Coen brothers.
Coen brothers.
But I don't finish up a cast yet, you know. So Penny Marshall is going to be in this movie, and she's going to play Jesse Eisenberg's mom, a minor role. You know, I guess support in the beginning, and you'll see her when he gets upset because his friend is coming back, and he asks her, maybe not for support, but just to call her and say, you know, mom, that bastard is, you know, whatever. Penny Marshall is the director of Big. She's actually an actress herself. She's in quite a few movies. She was in Entourage as well for a second. So I guess my movie is very much Entourage linked. We've got Adam Goldberg, we've got Beverly D'Angelo, we've got Penny Marshall. I guess three out of six people. That's 50% entourage so far. So, like I said, the friend comes back and he says, all right, you're in problems, Jesse, because I gave you this idea. And he comes back with this huge legal team, and he's clearly being funded by somebody and whatnot. And he causes, you know, he causes turmoil with the thing by showing not only that he came up with the idea, but kind of pulling a backdating scam where he's like, look at my brand. All of a sudden, he's got his own brand of kosher bacon that looks like this. I don't know if it's going to be a ridiculous ripoff, or maybe he doesn't need his own brand. Maybe he just comes saying that he had the idea and he should be paid for it. But he causes problems, and the business, you know, has problems because of it. And I wasn't too sure. I was thinking maybe I should have like a figurehead for the resistance other than the friend. And I was thinking maybe it would be like a proper rabbi. Not proper. Proper is not a good word. But a rabbi who believes that this is wrong because, you know, pig is not kosher. Or maybe just the head of like some sort of committee. But I thought that a great person for this, who could look imposing, but not physically imposing, just imposing in an evil sense, in a sense of that this person is, he can, you know, reign evil over me, I don't know, but funny evil in a little bit, is Sacha Baron Cohen.
I sat there and I was thinking, who would I pick? And I'm like, Ben Kingsley. Yes. Such a Baron Cohen. Oh my goodness.
I thought of Ben Kingsley for a second, but I don't really like him that much. Like he's, I know he's a knight. I know.
Oh, sorry, sir.
Exactly. I know
he
that
comes and he kills
people
him.
Love him in his serious roles, but I've never quite been a fan of his funny roles. Even though, for example, I love some of his movies where he is, or he tries to be funny, just like Where He Is a Rabbi with Josh Hartnett, Lucky Number 11. Yes, it's not a funny movie. Actually, I think it's a funny movie. But it's not extremely funny. It's not a big, like, ooh, laugh out loud thing. His character is a bit of comic relief for a lot of the time. You know, he's talking about, ooh, why did they call him the rabbi? Because he's a rabbi. Why did they call his son a fairy? Because he's a fairy, you know? And, ooh,
he
me
wasn't
killing
really being funny. It was just.
Yeah, but stuff like. Stuff. I know, yeah, exactly. That's exactly it. He's not funny. What he says is funny. And he doesn't pull it off 100%. And, you guys. Online can correct me if I'm wrong, point me to his great movies. I've seen pieces of the one where he's an assassin, not quite taken. I'll watch the whole movie and check it out, but yeah, show me if you think I'm wrong, tell me I'm wrong and tell me why, tell me where, and I'll check it out. But I don't get him as like a really funny dude. Yeah, but I think that's about it. And I was actually like, that's essentially it for my draft, but there was a thought that came to me that was kind of weird, kind of sad, really. I thought of our discussion that we had probably 2-3 months ago, maybe more, because I don't think Shannon has been on the show for a very for a long time, but it was the discussion we had when she was last on, where we talked about female protagonists. And I remember the original plan for this was you gave us a couple of rules, and one of the rules was you have to have at least two women.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll be damned if I could find places for women in my movie. I could not.
Sexist past.
I know. I thought to myself, is it because I'm somehow wired to think with only men, you know, because I couldn't even see the entrepreneur as a lady. I couldn't see Jesse Eisenberg as
so you couldn't see Tom Cruise as Angelina Jolie.
Well, I didn't have a Tom Cruise, but sure, I could.
You know what I'm talking about.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, no, I couldn't. It just, in my head, it didn't work. And I wonder if like you say, I wonder if there's some sort of bias that is ingrained in us.
Everyone just wants themselves as the lead, so they're all like, I need a dude there so I can be like, that's me.
But even the major supporting roles, I couldn't get a lead. I had to be like, I had to invent the upper level money man. I was just gonna have Adam Goldberg for a while. I had to invent the mother. I didn't need a mother at first. Like, wow, you know, like that's kind of ridiculous. That I couldn't just immediately say, oh, okay, two ladies, no big deal. I just make them this character and that character because it works with or without, you know, breasts.
Yeah, I get what you're saying because I'm about to give you my film and I definitely saw that problem coming in that I made all of my story and all my main characters wrapped around all the dudes. And then I was like, all right, we need some women to grab onto the dude's arms. Kind of stuff. Okay, so when I was thinking about my film, I was like, there's certain films I really love, and one genre of filmmaking that I particularly love are mob movies. So I'm going to make a generic mob film.
A generic mob film.
I'm going to make a completely generic mob film.
Okay, so stop. I'll tell you who your cast is. Your cast may or may not have Ray Liotta.
No. Like, it's going to be about
Joe Pesci.
This is New Wave. This is
Tony
New Wave.
Soprano.
This is New Wave. We're leaving all of the old fogies, all of the regular mobsters in the dust right now. My mob film is about this young hitman who works for the mob on a freelance basis, and he will be played by the one and only Jake Gyllenhaal.
Awesome.
And one night, while out doing his hitman work, he discovers something about the family that he should not have found out about. The family he works for is, give them an Italian name, I don't care. The head of the family is played by the one and only Tom Wilkinson, because I believe that man can pull off any fucking accent. I don't care if anyone argues with me about it being Italian. And his consigliere, I can't say it right, is played by Paul Giamatti. Their number one captain is played by Leonardo DiCaprio.
What kind of mafia family are you piecing together here, Andrew?
I know everyone is looking at this cast right now and saying, as if you made it Irish, it would be perfect. I don't care, they're Italian. Jake Gyllenhaal, the hitman who finds out something wrong and has to go against the family eventually by Act 2 and 3. His girlfriend is played by Kristen... No, sorry. Why did I say girlfriend? I meant mother. Is played by Kristen Scott Thomas. His girlfriend is played by Natalie Portman. And I even added in a third female because I had to be able to go further. And I say, I will make Leonardo DiCaprio's daughter. It will be a... Emma Stone with dark hair. And I'm going to go even further into the cast and say that the family's favorite, like dirty work dude, you know, the guy in the family who they go to anytime they need someone killed who isn't Jake Gyllenhaal, he would be played by Michael Jai White.
Wait, sorry, so
he's not a part
Michael
of
the Jai White is what?
He's not a part of the family, but he's someone they go to give work that they don't want the family to be connected.
So I have one question.
What's that?
Is this Michael Jai White a la every film he's made, or is this Michael Jai White a la Black Dynamite?
No, every film is not Black Dynamite. I never thought about Black Dynamite. And you're saying, Andrew, this movie sounds so overly cast. Who will you decide needs to make this movie? And I had two people that I was thinking of in making this movie, but the man I want to do it is the one and only PTA, Paul Thomas
PTA.
Anderson. This movie is going to be completely serious, completely so beautifully shot, so dramatic, that you're going to want to press play when it's over. Jake Gyllenhaal's character is going to go through a period of idolizing all of these people in the family, Tom Wilkinson, Leonardo DiCaprio, befriending Leonardo DiCaprio, going, wanting to be his best mate, until eventually he finds out this one thing, which I haven't decided what is, but who gives a damn right now, this one thing about the family, which is a deal breaker for him, and then he has to go against the family, and then he decides, and then by the end of the film, he's killing everybody. and this movie, did I mention it's set in the 30s?
By the way, does he have a set of skills that he has, you know, acquired over his career?
No, he's
that
young.
Will help
he's
him
young.
Too.
He doesn't have a career yet. He's a really skilled hitman, but a really young hitman. You know, one of those people who they're like, oh my goodness, I can't believe you're that good, but and you're so young kind of characters.
Yeah. Kind of like
he's just naturally
Casey
talented.
Affleck from Gone Baby Gone.
Kind of like that. And it's just something that's been dwelling on me, and I want to see. I can just imagine the final gunfight scene with Tommy guns blazing between DiCaprio and Gyllenhaal. Shot by PTA. And if anyone's curious as to what the other name I had on my list, as for just in case Douglas or Damien stole PTA from me, it was Sam Mendes to direct this film.
Wow.
I also had Edward Norton as an alternate for DiCaprio.
No. I will not watch 24 or 25th hour.
I love 25th hour.
Italian.
So
mafia.
I guess the question we have to ask right now
movie,
is, would you watch my movie?
Would I watch your movie? I'd have to watch your movie with the people that are in there, but I would be very, very suspicious. I'd be like, these people do not mix. What is this person doing?
Remember, 30s.
Wow. I don't get that. Mm-mm. But I guess I'd have to watch it. There's PTA, there's Leonardo DiCaprio, there's all these guys that I need to watch it for. So yes. And there's Mafia with somebody really getting crazy and killing people. Yes, please. So
I
guess I have to ask,
I have your $10 then.
You have my $10, and I have to ask you, do I have yours?
You're a matinee for me.
Wow.
I'm sorry, but I love Jesse Eisenberg and I love a lot of your cast, but the idea of the pig farm kosher thing, like, you're a matinee. Like if I got good reviews out of Sundance, I'd be watching you. Because that's a movie that I believe would be at Sundance kind of deal.
Yeah. I'm hoping for it to be not... Like I said, I don't want it to be like a thoroughly like ridiculous comedy. I want it to be like... Yeah, this is like not
maybe
quite
I'll
dark,
see
but like
2011.
You know, there you go. Exactly.
So I guess this is up to you guys. You guys listening? Like, would you watch our films? What kind of films would you make? I've left it open and no one's replied, unfortunately.
Unfortunately, you
even
bastards.
Though, even though I know the Mad Hatter over at the Dark of the Matinee spoke to me about it and he was going to record something for us, but he was a bit afraid to come up with something. So you know.
Why, Mr. Hatter? Why are you afraid?
So if you have anything, Hatter, send me something. Anyways, I guess that's the show. Good night. Thanks for listening. Next week we'll be talking about The Square, the new Australian film that just hit DVD recently. Good night. I have no reason to talk about this podcast anymore.
Well, what you do have reason to talk about is where they can find us.
Oh. Where can they find us, Douglas?
Well, they can, of course, find us at gmanreviews.com. We are also on the Podcast Alley on iTunes, if you'd like, and we would like you to. Please, make some reviews. Make us happy. Or make us sad, but, you know, tell us what you think.
We'll totally fucking read them on the show. Especially
we
the bad
will.
Ones.
We will, exactly. And of course you can find Andrew's writings on both gmanreviews.com and thefilmstage.com.
Woo. Oh yeah, and your plus 500 experience points.
So you can find Andrew on Twitter. His name is G-Man Reviews. My name on Twitter is DJ Arlost, his name. You can find my writings when I do such things on gmanreviews.com most times, or maybe mashedbits.com. And as always, Damien is Soccer Jersey at Twitter. And that's it. With a Z or a Z, depending on where you're from. So that's it from us tonight. Have fun listening. We'll be back the same time next week. Hopefully, we'll be back live as well. Good night, good folks.